Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. It is Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. So get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're about to talk TV with Dan Feinberg, and then we're going to continue talking some TV. We love talking about this stuff. We haven't done it in a while. Back in the days when they used to have very special episodes. And we're going to talk about some of the weirdest or some of the best or some of just the craziest and funniest very special episodes of television, particularly from sitcoms. So that's coming up and much more. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. It's been a couple of weeks since we talked to Dan Feinberg, and a lot. He's been very, very busy in those 2 weeks. The TCA tour, which we'll tell you all about, just concluded yesterday, and he is back, and we're going to talk TV and a bunch of other stuff. The Golden Globe winners were handed out. I want to get Dan's response to that, too. But Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
How are you?
I'm holding it together,
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks. So tell everybody, before we get into the details of the TCA, which we will, tell everybody about what this is and all the background on that.
The background is that for the past 2 weeks, I have been basically a shut-in at the Langham Hotel in Pasadena for the Television Critics Association press tour, which brings together several hundred of your favorite TV critics and reporters all under one roof. To pepper network executives and various showrunners and actors and other various people associated with your favorite or soon-to-be favorite upcoming spring TV shows from all the networks, many of the streaming services, and lots of cable entities. I believe the count is that over the last 14 days, we had over 135 press conferences.
Oh, my God. Wow. All right. Well, I want to get that's a lot of stuff to talk about, too, Dan. And I definitely want to get into that for sure. So but before that, the Golden Globes. Let's talk about the Golden Globes. We haven't been able we haven't talked to each other since they handed them out. Overall, what did you think of the show?
I thought that Seth Meyers did a very good job. I thought he did as well, honestly, as he possibly could have under the circumstances. If they weren't going to get Amy Poehler and Tina Fey to host the show or something to that effect, Seth Meyers was a good choice, and Seth Meyers handled the moment and all of the awkwardness inherent in celebrating an industry that has become a massive tire fire in the past 3 months. I think he handled it as well as you could. And from there, you know, the show obviously had the big Oprah moment. I don't know where you watched the show, but where I watched the show, people were audibly sobbing through the second half of Oprah's speech. Mm. So, there was that brief moment where we thought she was running for president the day after, and now a week has passed, and I don't know if we feel quite so sure about that anymore. But you know, it was a good moment. That's how these things go. And the winners themselves, there were a couple of good speeches. There were some surprising winners. There were, you know, the TV winners mostly sort of went along with what the Emmys did, but there were some kind of out of nowhere choices. It was interesting enough. It was an okay award show, and
yeah,
that was all I was hoping it would be.
I thought Meyers' monologue was great. I really did. And you know, the credits at the end, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler did write jokes, so there was the obviously like half of his writing staff wrote a bunch of stuff too. And one of my favorite bits that Seth Meyers does is when he has his two writers on and he can't do the punchlines for jokes. And I thought that bringing that in was really, I thought that was funny. Because that's actually one of my favorite.
I thought it was good and well done.
Yeah.
I wish they brought Amber Ruffin in just because it would have been a chance to get her out in front of a larger audience than she gets otherwise.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, she did hold the mic for the celebrities who did the punchlines. She and the other writer who, and I always blank on her name, the other writer, they were both the people holding the mics for the people.
That doesn't seem like quite enough.
No.
I guess that's a nice nod. And honestly, I hadn't realized that it was them holding the mics. Yeah. So, yay.
Yeah. And so it was nice that they got a little, it was, I mean, obviously they didn't speak, and people who don't watch Seth probably had no idea who they were, but I thought that was kind of a nice gesture to have them out there because it's their bit, you know. So, but I, yeah, I thought his monologue was great, and I thought, you know, the show was the show. Oprah's speech obviously was, you know, the zeitgeist of the moment, and really, really was pretty amazing. And you know, as far as the awards go, they were good. Was there was no in memoriam? Does the Golden Globes not do that anymore?
I feel like they have in the past. There definitely was no in memoriam this time, and yeah. I can't necessarily say why. I've sort of, as I've been glancing over the winners, I've been struck by just how many of the male winners have been accused of some form of sexual impropriety just in the past 2 weeks. I mean, yay! What a absolute tire fire this all is.
It's ridiculous. All right, well, let's go through the TV winners. The winner of Best TV Series Drama, Handmaid's Tale, no surprise there.
No, it was not, and, you know, good for them.
Yeah. The trailer. Have you seen the trailer for the new season, or have you seen any of the new season?
I have seen the first episode of the new season, and I believe I can probably, assuming that no Hulu publicists are listening, say that it's good, and that is about all I can say at this point.
All I know is that the trailer makes the season two look even darker than the first season. I was like, oh my God, not watching it.
The first episode is incredibly dark.
That is
all I will say on the subject. It is very dark.
Oh, man. All right. Best TV series comedy. This one was a surprise. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. A pleasant one.
I feel like it's a very Golden Globe-y choice, especially if you consider the past wins for Mozart in the Jungle and Transparent. Apparently, they play the game right at Amazon when it comes to the Golden Globe voters, and it is very much a strategic game to get on the radar with those somewhere between 60 and 80 random foreign people no one's ever heard of, and apparently Amazon does it right. Yeah. And I like The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel a lot, and that's great. This is reflective of more campaigning than anything else.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if it gets people to watch a very good show, I am 100% in favor of it.
In the TV movie limited series, I mean, it was all Big Little Lies, and that wasn't a surprise at all, right, Dan?
Yeah, no. Big Little Lies across the board, and the only question was whether there were going to be random qualms among Golden Globe voters about the fact that the show has been renewed for a second season since they gave it the nominations, and therefore, frankly, it's not a limited series, but they determined it was, and they weren't going to pass up an opportunity to have Nicole Kidman on the stage winning an award. So, there it goes.
Best Actor, a TV series drama, Sterling K. Brown for This Is Us. That's deserved, I think.
It's totally deserved, and of the men who won awards this night, he has not been accused of anything bad, because Sterling K. Brown is a scholar and a gentleman, and if it comes out that he's done anything bad, it will absolutely crush me, because he seems like a good person, and I will continue to believe that until proven otherwise.
TV series actress in a drama went to Elizabeth Moss, deservedly so.
Yay.
Yeah, she's the best. Best actor in a TV series comedy, here we go. Aziz Ansari for Master of None. Yes. And then actress went to Rachel Brosnahan for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which I thought was nice.
Absolutely. You know, that was such a good category. If it had been Pamela Adlon, I'm sure we would have both been overjoyed.
Yeah, yeah.
We would have both been overjoyed with Alison Brie. Frankie Shaw is really, really good in Smilf, and Issa Rae is great in Insecure. Anyone who would have won that category would have deserved it.
Absolutely. Best actor, limited TV series, TV movie. Ewan McGregor for Fargo. I was actually kind of surprised by that. I thought, for some reason, De Niro was going to get it.
I was also surprised. I feel like last time I was on, I might have predicted Jude Law as an upset pick, and you know that would have been as wrong as anything. Apparently they do like their foreign actors who are sometimes movie actors in TV. And I like Ewan McGregor in Fargo, so by all means.
Absolutely. Supporting actor, limited TV series again, Alexander Skarsgård for Big Little Lies. Supporting actress went to Laura Dern for Big Little Lies. Actress went to Nicole Kidman for Big Little Lies, and so there you go. Those are the winners that night. So, it was a fine show. It was, you know, and I thought some of the moments on stage were good. They went long pretty early though. Maybe that's why maybe that's why they didn't have an in memoriam. I mean, maybe they were running really long. So,
I really hate the idea that they would have cut an in memoriam. For that reason, that feels unfortunate. I feel like there was a lot of pretty cruddy banter that they could have cut instead. They probably God, I mean, the Golden Globes do that horrible thing where basically they show a trailer for every single nominated movie, which accomplishes nothing other than getting trailers for the nominated movies in, and that presumably gets movie stars in the door. It's kind of disgraceful if that was what also took time that could have been served to honor various luminaries. Definitely not the best use of time at all points during the show, I would say.
I was very pleased to see Three Billboards. I know there's a backlash against Three Billboards now, which I just think is absurd, quite frankly. And I was very happy to see Three Billboards just, like, really sort of dominate. And on the comedy side, I was really happy to see Lady Bird. They're two of my favorite movies of the year.
I'm going to be very interested to see what the Oscar nominations look like. I think there are a lot of wide open categories and a lot of chances for really strange things to sneak in and a lot of chances for people to be really pissed off with what some of the categories look like. Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting to see what they look like.
Well, I will find out Tuesday morning. That's when they announce it, Tuesday morning. But I just was thrilled that Sam, I don't know. I mean, I thought Willem Dafoe was a lock. And when Sam Rockwell won, I was just sort of beside myself because I love that man so much. And then he goes on SNL and drops an F-bomb in the first sketch.
I love Florida Project, though, as a movie, and I think Willem Dafoe is really, really good in it, and I think he's the only chance that Florida Project has of getting any sort of recognition,
and
it was my favorite movie of last year, and I would be unhappy if it ended up getting no recognition at all, whereas I think Three Billboards is likely to get a lot of recognition.
Yeah, I agree.
So I want to make sure Florida Project gets a couple things so that people have a reason to look for it, and so that people go, oh, right, I need to see that movie.
No, it is it's a terrific film, Dan. You know, my favorite movie of last year, I did my number one was Colossal. That was my favorite movie of the year.
I have an award screener for it sitting next to my TV, and I've been a little busy for the past couple weeks, so I haven't talked to it. But I really will, I promise.
Yeah, it's a pretty extraordinary piece of work. So, all right, Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about the 2 weeks that he spent in a hotel interviewing people for 14 days straight for hours and hours and hours at the TCA Tour. So that's all coming up. We got a break here for the news. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5. We're going to talk about very special episodes of TV from the past, we've talked about this before, and it's fun, and I want to get everybody's thoughts on it in case you guys weren't listening, you know, some months back when we talked about it. But it's one of my favorite subjects are the very special episodes of TV, and we're talking TV right now in general with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and he has spent the last couple of weeks at the TCA tour. And let's get his thoughts on some of the stuff that he experienced. Hey, Dan, welcome back.
Well, thank you much.
Okay, so the press tour was 2 weeks in a hotel. Give me some of the your favorite highlights and some of the panels that stood out for you.
Let's see. We had multiple panels with Benedict Cumberbatch via satellite from different locations, which gives us an impression that Benedict Cumberbatch is a very, very busy man working busily in multiple countries and thus unable to get to Pasadena. I think it was yesterday that he showed up from London. I think at the beginning of tour, he showed up by a satellite from Atlanta, so he's just a busy man, that Benedict Cumberbatch.
Now, what was he promoting, or what was he talking about?
He has a lot of TV projects. He has a PBS Masterpiece Theater thing that he executive produced and co-stars in with Kelly MacDonald that involves a couple whose daughter goes missing, and it's one of those shows where they grieve and fall apart, and maybe at some point their lives find purpose again or something to that effect. But Kelly MacDonald talked all Scottish, and she was charming, and Benedict Cumberbatch was via satellite, and he too was charming. And then the other thing he has is Patrick Melrose, based on the popular series of novels, and that's for Showtime, and it features, among other people, Allison Williams from Girls. And in neither case have I seen screeners for them, but in both cases, Benedict Cumberbatch seemed very, very thoughtful about the TV things he's doing, and then also doing Doctor Strange and things like that.
Right.
He's a busy man, Benedict Cumberbatch is. Also a surprisingly busy man, thinking of people who were on multiple press tour panels. We had Brendan Fraser wearing a gigantic cowboy hat for FX's Trust. And it was nice to see Brendan Fraser alive and well, and again, wearing a gigantic cowboy hat.
We just, the last week, I believe it was, Dan, we were asking where the hell Brendan Fraser was.
Well, the answer to that question is on your TV sets all spring long. He's going to be in FX's Trust, which is basically All the Money in the World, Only More Interesting, in which he plays basically Mark Wahlberg, only in a giant cowboy hat, and not getting 1,000 times more money than Michelle Williams. So, so there's that. And then he's also in Audience Network's rather strange, and I'm not quite sure I get it yet, miniseries remake adaptation of 3 Days of the Condor, which is just called Condor.
What?
And he plays a bad madman in that.
What? Wow.
This is the thing that's happening. The Audience Network is kind of remaking 3 Days of the Condor.
Wow. That's one of my favorite Redford movies.
If I had not told you that that's what it was, and if it were not called Condor, I think you could watch the pilot, and maybe at the end of the first episode, you'd go, that's a little bit like 3 Days of the Condor, but you probably wouldn't even think that.
Wow.
So
okay.
That's the kind of remake that one is. So multiple panels with Benedict Cumberbatch, multiple panels with Brendan Fraser. Let's see, what else?
FX do a panel for Atlanta?
They did, and we've only seen exactly one scene from the new season.
Man.
So I can't tell you anything other than that the one season was funny, and that Donald Glover talked about how the new season was based, apparently in structure, around a famous episode of the Tiny Toons cartoon. I have no idea what to make of that. I have yet to go back and watch any Tiny Toons since then myself to get a feeling.
Yeah.
But yes, he claims that it is based in structure upon a Tiny Toons cartoon. And they were very, very funny and very, very entertaining, even though we hadn't seen the episode. And I'm feeling optimistic about it.
Well, so. Yeah. I mean, so am I. So what else, Dan, stood out for you?
Let's see. For PBS, we had Angela Lansbury, who at 92 is very, very sharp, and she is playing Aunt March in a PBS version of Little Women, and PBS version of Little Women, which stars Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's daughter, Maya, as Jo. People can look and they'll go, oh, that young woman looks an awful lot like Uma Thurman, and indeed she does. Let's see, what else? At the last panel of the press tour, I got the chance to ask Bill Nye the Science Guy how many bow ties he has, because I'm a journalist, and sometimes you have to do that. The answer apparently is somewhere in the neighborhood of 500. So,
jeez.
So now you know that. Apparently people don't send Bill Nye the Science Guy bow ties as much as you would think that they would. He claims he only gets sent like 6 a year, which means that you should send bow ties to Bill Nye the Science Guy, apparently.
All right. ABC, how were their panels this because I guess Jimmy Kimmel kicked it off?
Jimmy Kimmel kicked it off by talking about how much it was going to be appropriate to basically spend the entire 90th Oscars talking about how badly they screwed up the 89th Oscars. The answer appears to be that they will make jokes about it, but they will probably not make jokes about it for the entirety of the show, which is probably a good idea because no one really needs to have jokes made about that for long. I mean, this is not Miss Universe where you can ride Steve Harvey making a fool of himself for like 5 years of subsequent publicity. This is supposed to be somewhat more legitimate than that. And so hopefully the Oscars will not overly harp on the screw up from last year. Let's see, what other fun stuff did we have? It was, you know, we had Al Pacino via satellite talking about his HBO Joe Paterno biopic. Apparently these days all Al Pacino does is make HBO biopics with Barry Levinson.
Right.
You know, it's a living. and everyone talked about sort of their perspectives on how they were viewing Joe Paterno and what he did know and didn't know, and it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. Judd Apatow has a four-hour documentary about Gary Shandling for HBO, and Judd came and talked about that and talked about, you know, his impressions of a man he cared about very deeply, and
when does that run?
Funny and powerful.
When does that run?
Even a couple months. I don't remember the exact premiere date on that one. Let me see if I have it at near. No, I do not. Unfortunately, okay. Have it right.
And that's HBO, right?
That is HBO. I think it's this spring,
okay.
And it's very, very in depth. And if people are fans of Gary Shandling, certainly they will want to watch that.
Well, I'm going to mark that one down for sure. So
no, there was. Let's see what else we got. I'm trying to think of a couple other highlights to throw at you. Ryan Murphy was everywhere for Fox and FX because he's got just about everything on both those two networks. Let's see. What else was there? There was a lot of stuff. We had panels from Snap, Crackle, and Pop during the cable portion of things. Pop, the cable network that has Schitt's Creek, they did a panel. Crackle, the streaming network that has the upcoming The Oath, they did a panel. And yes, Snapchat came and talked about their plans for original programming, because what we need is original Snapchat programming.
Oh, wow.
And someone needs to explain to me what Snapchat is at some point.
Yeah.
Not urgent, though, apparently.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like you kept pretty busy talking to a ton of people. I do want to mention, before we get to some of the newer stuff, that episode of yesterday morning, I watched the episode of L.A. to Vegas with with Dermot Mulroney and Dylan McDermott, and I have to say, very special. I just was beside myself during it. I thought it was so funny.
For a certain subset of viewers, it is everything they could want in a episode of comedy featuring Dylan McDermott and Dermot Mulroney.
Yeah.
And I think that I fit into that subset as well.
Yeah, I certainly do. And just like, you know, just the fact that they cast him as the nemesis pilot, and he's got a mustache too, and all that. I thought they were both really, really funny and in it. And overall, I'm enjoying that show. It's not great, but I think there are lots of laughs, and I think a lot of people are very funny in it. And again, Dylan McDermott, the way they use him in the show in small doses, I think is brilliant. And that episode just cracked me up. So
I agree completely.
All right. Okay. Hang on, Dan. Okay.
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We got more TV to talk about. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. We'll take a break and come back and talk more TV with Dan right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. One artist, three songs. And we're going to talk about very special episodes of TV. But right now, we're just talking about TV in general. Dan Feinberg has had a busy couple of weeks, and he's unwinding now with us. Now, he's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. And you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. And we welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
I would just like to say, the last time you were on, and I would like to say this, you were absolutely right about Catastrophe. So
I figured I would be.
What a good show, man. It's really, really good. Tell everybody what it is. If people haven't seen it, we can get maybe a few more viewers to watch it.
The plot of Catastrophe is very, very simple. An American, I think, on a business trip in London, is it as simple as that?
Yeah.
Has a one-night stand with a British woman and impregnates her, and rather than, leaving or anything else, he decides to stay around in London, and they decide to become a couple, and that's the plot of the show. The plot of the show is the very strange circumstance in which these very different people were forced together and their new life together. And it is tart and it is strange. strange, and it's very, very dark and gets darker and darker as it goes along. And it's also extremely funny and extremely profane. And it's just a good show. And I figured you'd like it.
It's terrific. And it's on Amazon if people want to watch it. It is a really good show. And I thank you for the recommendation, Dan. Okay.
For sure. I'm surprised you hadn't watched it sooner on it.
Yeah, I know. I guess I just kept putting it off. And then finally, you know, when you gave it the big stamp of approval, I was like, all right. And I watched it in a day. So, yeah. All right. You've seen The Alienist. This is being advertised like crazy on TNT and looks really interesting. And this is sort of a thing now, huh? Dan, shows about getting into the mind of killers. Is that now, does that seem to be a trend?
Well, it has become a trend. And the funny thing is that if they had just been able to make The Alienist back when Caleb Carr's novel came out in the mid-90s, it would have been ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And instead, now it feels basically entirely like Mindhunter in the 19th century. And the entire plot line of Mindhunter was, of course, these two FBI agents trying to come to terms with the idea of serial killers without knowing the term for it, and trying to figure out what would cause men to do horrible things like that. And that happens to be the exact same plot of The Alienist, where in 1896, the body of a boy in women's clothing who turns out to work for a brothel for wealthy men of disturbing appetites turns up horribly mutilated, and the cops don't care, because why would they care? But two people do care, and one of them is alienist Dr. Laszlo Kreisler, played by Daniel Brühl, and alienists at the time were basically shrinks. They were studiers of the alienated mind. And the other person who cares is his buddy John Moore, an illustrator for the New York Times, played by Luke Evans. And they both went to Harvard with a certain police lieutenant by the name of Theodore Roosevelt. And yeah, they investigate the crime with the help of a proto-feminist who works adjacent to the NYPD Blue at the time, played by Dakota Fanning. And it's a dark, brooding, very beautifully produced serial killer drama. And more than anything, it's really glorious to look at. I don't know necessarily that TNT is the best place for this show. It may have been something that was better off on a premium network where they could be a little bit more graphic, but instead they treat the violence in sort of a more graphic novel style so that they can imply a lot of things. It's still very dark, not to watch with the family. I thought it was interesting and very pretty. So, you know, there's definitely a show to watch on your TV in HD if you can.
How many episodes have you seen, Dan?
I have seen the first two episodes.
Okay.
And it's a kind of odd show because I couldn't tell you who the driving creative force on it is. Cary Fukunaga is still listed as co-writer on the first episode and executive producer, but he didn't actually write or run the series, and he didn't direct any of it. And yet I think a lot of people seem to think he did, because he was attached to it for a long time. And if you watch the credits, there are like five writers whose names people would recognize if they looked up, who just popped by as executive producers, because at some point they tried to develop this, because it was such a complicated project to develop. And it kind of feels like a show that maybe was developed without a storytelling driving force. It's very, very pretty. The director on the first couple episodes is Jakob Verbruggen, who directed the first season of Netflix's The Fall, which is also a serial killer drama, and so he knows that kind of thing. But it definitely feels much more like a director-driven than a writer-driven series, and you can kind of tell how that feels different. And I don't know that it's for the best, but it's what got it to TV.
Okay, so that's The Alienist, and does that begin? This begins this week, doesn't it, I think?
It begins on the 22nd.
22nd, okay, so Monday.
Monday.
Okay, great. So that's The Alienist on TNT. I'm intrigued by it. I threw it on my DVR, so we'll see what happens.
I mean, I think it tells you right up front what it is. If you like period shows, if you like icky serial killer shows, it'll probably be in your wheelhouse.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right. So that's The Alienist. Now, we have another comic book series that has premiered on the CW. And this one is a DC Comics adaptation, Black Lightning. And how do we feel about Black Lightning?
I liked Black Lightning. I particularly liked the pilot for Black Lightning. I didn't love the second episode as much, but the pilot, which aired earlier this week, it comes from Salim Akil and Mara Brock Akil, who have worked on a number of shows over the years, Girlfriends. I'm trying to think of what shows are on Salim Akil's credits. They both have solid credits, and it stars Cress Williams, who people will know from Heart of Dixie, from Beverly Hills 90210, and he plays a high school principal in a gang-ridden fictional city who at one point in his life was the superhero Black Lightning. He apparently has the ability to control electricity, but he gave it up to be a better father and husband, but unfortunately, circumstances beyond his control are going to cause him to step back into the suit and become Black Lightning once again. Mm. It's a smarter, deeper show than most of the CW superhero shows, especially with most of them kind of in the middle of so-so seasons. And I liked it, and I particularly liked that they keep swearing that it's not tied to the other ones in any way, so you can just watch this and not need to worry about crossovers with the other shows. And yeah. I find that to be a tremendous relief.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend who is a comic book geek, and he watched it and posted a glowing review on his Facebook page. So, if that means
anything. I dig it, and it's the kind of thing where maybe if you don't necessarily like a lot of the other DC comic shows on the CW, because heaven knows they have either enough or too many.
Right.
It's not exactly like those. Okay. And so it probably does a lot of the things right that some of those shows don't do necessarily as well.
Got it. Okay. That's Black Lightning on the CW. Dan, hang on, okay?
For sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter. He's a TV critic. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV, and that's what we're doing right now. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we'll take a break for the news. When we come back, more TV talk with Dan right after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. Get them in. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. And continuing to talk about TV, and we're also going to talk about the very special episodes, classic very special episodes of television, particularly sitcoms, when they got very special. So we'll reminisce about that and talk a little bit about that. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. My guest is Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins me biweekly to talk TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter, and you should, at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And let's get back to the conversation with Dan. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Have you seen any of the new episodes of Baskets?
I have not seen any of the new episodes of Baskets, unfortunately, but I am looking forward to them somewhere down the road when I have time to watch them. If you looked at my DVR right now, your eyes would pop out of your head in horror. It is a scary, scary thing, and it's only going to get worse.
Yeah. Well, Baskets premieres Tuesday. And it comes back for season three, and I couldn't be more excited about it. And we've been championing this show since season one, and I'm very excited that it's coming back. You just said that your DVR is insane. Have you put together a structure as to what you're going to watch first and what you're going to watch after that? What are we looking at here, Dan?
Well, here's the problem. Later today, I'm heading off to Park City for the Sundance Film Fest.
Oh, you're going to Sundance. So,
so I'm 2 weeks behind on literally every single show I watch, and I'm about to fall another week and a half behind on everything.
Oh, man.
So by the time I get clear of this, it's going to be the end of the month, and I'm going to be 4 weeks behind on absolutely everything. And so the answer to your question on strategy is I always start with the half hours because those are just easier to kill off.
Right.
And they don't loom in quite the same horrifying way that if you fall behind 4 weeks on a bunch of dramas, they really can. But no, I mean, like once I get back from Sundance, I don't have a clue what I'm going to do. I'm just going to look at my TBR and cry, or maybe I'll just give up on television entirely, which might not be the best idea.
No, considering that's how you make a living. So yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I probably won't do that, but it's a daunting prospect. And my TBR basically. I got it down to somewhere in the neighborhood of 31%, and this is a DVR that has like 180 hours of available space before press tour. After press tour, it's back up to over 60%.
Oh, man.
And, it's going to be 85% to 90% full when I get back from Park City. So, yay!
Oh, wow. That's a lot of TV to watch, Dan. All right, so tell me a little bit.
I think you're going to have to help me perform triage next time I'm on it.
Okay.
I'm going to ask your advice.
All right. So let me. What are you looking forward to at Sundance? What are your plans at Sundance?
Well, this year at Sundance, this is the reason why I'm going, because normally I don't cover many movies, is they made a big deal about this indie episodic section that they're doing this year, which is going to be kind of television. Like in recent years, there have been a number of fairly large TV premieres at Sundance. Probably the largest was O.J. Made in America.
Right.
But there have been, major network shows that have premiered at Sundance. And this year there isn't anything like that. What there is instead is there's a section with somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 little independently produced pilots. One or two of them have small networks attached. There's something called This Close, which is going to air next month on Sundance now, that stars Shoshana Stern, who some people will remember as the deaf actress from the first couple seasons of Weeds.
Yeah.
And it's largely in ASL. It's an interesting show that she co-created. And so that's, something with someone recognizable. But I'm going to be watching a lot of those things. Some of the biggest stars, like Matthew Lillard, stars in one of the pilots. Well, okay. I mean, Matthew Lillard is in the middle of a major comeback, but still. And then what else is there? There's a Steve James series, so that's bound to be at least interesting. It's a documentary series called America to Me, and I'll be watching 5 hours of that. There's one day that there's a screening of a six-hour Netflix documentary series called Wild Wild Country about a cult in Oregon in 1981. So that's 6 hours in a small theater in Park City, and I'll just be chilling and doing that. And then before that, I'm just going to be doing a handful of documentary reviews, sometimes things relating to TV, like there's a Mr. Rogers documentary.
Yeah, I've read all about that. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, so it's from Morgan Neville, who did 20 Feet from Stardom, and I'm assuming that one is going to make me cry, and if it doesn't make me cry, that's going to speak poorly for it, but I'm assuming it's going to make me
cry. That's exactly the same way I feel, Dan. I'm also curious to see, I don't know how long ago they made this, but I'm also curious to see if they include George Romero in it and his thoughts, because he obviously got his start working on Mr. Rogers. So I wonder if they interviewed him before he passed.
I figure it's a 2-hour documentary about Mr. Rogers. I think a lot of the random people, Michael Keaton, who got his start working with Mr. Rogers. I have to assume he has some involvement. You never know for sure, of course.
Yeah,
but and then also PBS presented during press tour. Going back to press tour, they presented their own Mr. Rogers sort of retrospective. So there's a lot of that because it's the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers.
Right.
So there's going to be a lot of Mr. Rogers this year.
All right. Well, enjoy Sundance. I wanted to ask you obviously you haven't watched it because you're way behind, but I'm a fan of the Sunday night back-to-back HBO shows. I like Crashing. I think Crashing is a very entertaining show, and I love Divorce, and they both came back, and that to me is a solid block.
And both are piling up on my DVR along with everything else. I can see the red light on right now telling me it's recording something else, and I don't even know what it's recording. It has a life of its own, which is probably basically a Black Mirror episode. So, yeah.
So well, anyway, they started out strong. Divorce and Crashing both started out really strong. And I actually really think Divorce is a terrific show. I really do.
Huh. And it's I will need to check back in on that. I actually have heard good things about the start of the second season, yeah. So I should check in on that.
All right. Tell me about Corporate. I've got it on my DVR, and I'm looking forward to it. It's Comedy Central's new comedy.
It is, let's see. It has it has a couple actors people will know. It has Ann Dudek, who people will know from House and probably from a lot of other things, actually. And Lance Reddick, who people will know from The Wire and Fringe and also many other things. It's basically about two low-level junior executive in training peons, basically, at a multinational corporation that makes everything. And it's one of those... here's a gigantic soulless corporation, and here's all the funny stuff about how they work. So it's a little bit Better Off Ted, but it's darker and perhaps less amusingly surreal than Better Off Ted. I think Better Off Ted was also a lot funnier. People should watch Better Off Ted. Have you seen Better Off Ted, Nick?
No, I haven't.
You should. It was a great ABC show that did not last very long, and I don't know where it's available these days to watch, but everyone should watch Better Off Ted.
Okay.
So that's the ultimate message here. But also Corporate, going back to that, it's very dark. I would describe the style as something in the neighborhood of kind of Barton Fink meets The Office scenes in Brazil.
Whoa!
Not necessarily, it's not Terry Gilliam.
Okay.
So don't listen, and it's not the Coen brothers.
Right, okay.
It's kind of a little bit like someone who watched Terry Gilliam. Coen brothers.
You mentioned two of my favorite movies ever, so that's why I kind of freaked out.
So now imagine those movies going through Xerox several times and then eventually having degraded, and I don't know if the kids know today what a Xerox is, but anyway. but that's sort of an idea of what the sensibility is, even if it's not exactly there. And I laughed at it here and there, and I think the co-creators, two of them are the stars of the show, and one of them directed every episode, and most people aren't going to know who any of them are, but they have a nice troll sensibility, and I laughed enough at the four episodes I've seen that I'll definitely keep watching, and it definitely has a unique look, and some people who are kind of lazy are going to compare it to Office Space. I don't think it actually is in any way like Office Space at all, except that it's set in office. But I feel like we sort of resort to easy comparisons, and that's an easy one. I think it's interesting, and I think it's the kind of show that has potential to grow. And given that everyone involved is relatively inexperienced, there's no reason to think that they would hit the ground instantly, so I will definitely be watching more episodes. I've seen four.
Okay, cool. I'm definitely going to watch it, and I know that returning on Comedy Central next week is Another Period and Drunk History. Both shows, I think, are hilarious, so I'm looking forward to some more Comedy Central.
I need to watch Another Period more regularly. I don't know that I've watched it for a couple seasons now, but it's got so many talented people in it. I always enjoy it when I do watch it.
It's really funny. Natasha Leggero was on Kimmel just last night and told an unbelievable story involving her being sexually harassed by James Toback that involved him wanting her to be in Two Girls and a Guy. Making her grow her armpit hair to 4 inches long, and then taking her to Central Park and humping a tree while she held up her arms. And it's the most insane story. It's the most insane. And the way she told it, and she's like way pregnant, like big, and she's very uncomfortable, and she's telling this weird story. It was a surrealistic interview. And like, when it was over, Jimmy Kimmel, after she told the story, Jimmy Kimmel says, "I'm sorry." Well, I'm sorry for the, he goes, "I don't even know what I'm sorry for after hearing that story." So if you get a chance to check out that interview, it's pretty interesting. And she said she was the 395th person to come out against James Toback. So.
Definitely, there have been enough people that very little would be surprising, and yet that story does sound surprising.
It's absolutely, but it's insane. And she tells it really, I mean, you know, she laughs throughout the story. She's like, I can laugh now. It was like 22 years ago. But it is really, and like Kimmel's reaction is just priceless. It was really funny. So anyway, but yeah, she's great on Another Period. And so that's stuff I'm looking forward to. All right. Well, listen, Dan, get a little rest before you go off to Utah. and have fun in Utah, and have fun at Sundance, and then when you come back, we can help you triage what's going on your DVR.
I will definitely appreciate the help, and I will definitely appreciate a tease on what I've missed on Top Chef and all of the
I will do all of that. Yeah. You've not been watching Top Chef then, right?
No, I'm 2 episodes behind.
Okay, I won't say a word. Okay.
Dan, are you enjoying it still?
Very much. Yes. If you're watching, for people who are watching Last Chance Kitchen, a villain has finally emerged, Dan. But you'd have to be watching last week's Last Chance Kitchen. I watched last week's Last Chance Kitchen after watching the regular episode, and as I was watching it, I'm like, oh, so there's the jerk. So there it is, for whatever that's worth.
Excellent.
Okay. Dan, get some rest, have fun in Sundance, and we'll talk to you when you get back, okay?
Sounds good. Always a pleasure, Nick.
Take care, buddy. There you go. Dan Feinberg, he's great. TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, going up to Sundance to cover that. You can follow him. He writes about a ton of stuff. He's a great writer. And you follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. And he will join us in a couple of weeks. All right. Busy guy. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about those very special episodes of TV. Oh, I forgot to ask Dan his choice for that. Well, his brain is fried anyway. So, all right. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back after this on WGN.